Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are getting deep into the machinery of modern workforce strategy.
We are.
We're tackling a topic that, honestly, I think a lot of executives still mentally file under admin costs, but it's really a fundamental strategic lever, strategic staff augmentation. And a huge thank you to you, our listener, for sending over the source material for this one, a really detailed executive guide on workforce models.
It's a great source.
It is. So our mission today is pretty straightforward. We need to completely reframe this discussion.
Move beyond the old ideas.
Exactly. We have to get past the shallow concept of staff augmentation as just temp labor. We're going to analyze it as a precise execution-driven strategy.
One designed for specific outcomes.
Right. For scaling capacity, for dramatically reducing your financial risk, and for getting immediate access to very targeted specialized skills. The goal here is to really understand the strategic value, not just the tactical function.
And the timing for this couldn't be better. I mean, the central tension every organization faces today is this brutal demand for speed and for flexible capacity.
But the old way gets in the way.
It does. The traditional model, you know, permanent fixed headcount.
Yeah.
It just introduces so much structural friction.
Yeah.
We're talking long, costly hiring timelines, huge sunk overhead, and just an inability to pivot quickly.
So if your market is dynamic, permanent hiring is basically a high-risk gamble.
It really is. And this deep dive is all about uncovering how strategic staff augmentation, when it's done correctly, resolves that fundamental tension. It helps you create an organizational structure that's genuinely responsive.
That idea of structural tension is the perfect lens. So let's start with the definitions because the language here really matters. What exactly is staff augmentation?
Okay.
And how does that core mechanism of operational control distinguish it from, say, traditional temp staffing or the more complex model of managed services?
Right. So at its core, staff augmentation, or SA, is about extension within control.
Extension within control.
Okay. It lets you augment your internal teams with external professionals. But, and this is the absolute key, they operate entirely within your existing structures, your processes, your management hierarchy.
So even though they're an employee of the staffing provider, they plug right into my daily workflow. They report to my managers.
Exactly.
So if the team lead is internal, the process is internal, and the tools are all internal. What we're really talking about is operational continuity.
Absolutely. Operational continuity is the defining feature. Your existing team, they retain full ownership of the project priorities, of the proprietary processes, and the ultimate outcomes.
So the external staff are just there to supplement capacity.
Purely to supplement labor capacity where you have those critical gaps. But, and this is crucial, SA is only an effective strategy if you already have the functional leadership and the infrastructure to manage the project.
What happens if you don't?
If you don't have good internal management, SA will just amplify the chaos.
That makes perfect sense, and it immediately clarifies the difference between this and, you know, traditional staffing.
Oh, yeah.
Traditional staffing feels more like filling a generic hole for a very defined, repeatable task, like a specific role on a production line.
Precisely. Traditional staffing is often focused on transactional task execution. XA, on the other hand, it prioritizes what the source calls embedded contributions.
Embedded contributions.
Yeah. These augmented workers, they're expected to function as true extensions of your internal team. That means they have to adapt to your specific internal systems, your software stacks, your safety standards, your performance metrics.
So the provider handles the HR and payroll, but the client, you drive the actual execution and performance.
Exactly.
Okay, now this is where the analysis needs to get really granular, because I think this is the strategic differentiator for executives.
I agree.
Managed services versus staff augmentation. The source material calls this the critical distinction. So lay out that trade-off for us.
The whole distinction boils down entirely to risk transfer and outcome ownership.
Okay, risk and ownership.
With managed services, you're contracting out a clearly defined deliverable, a product, a service. The provider assumes the outcome ownership.
Yeah, they own the result.
They own the result. They set their own schedules, use their own methodology, and deliver based on service level agreements, or SLAs. If the project fails, they absorb that risk of failure. They have to fix it.
But with SA?
With SA, the client, you retain the responsibility for delivery and for the outcome. The augmented professional is working under your direction, using your methods.
So I keep the control, but I also keep the risk.
You keep the execution risk.
Yeah.
And that's why SA is the choice when internal oversight is essential, usually in really dynamic environments where requirements are changing too fast to sign some fixed scope contract. You need that flexibility to shift priorities, you know, hour by hour.
So let me try an analogy. If I need a complex new feature for our software, managed services means I pay a firm to deliver the finished feature. They manage it all. SA means I bring in three specialized coders to sit with my team, use our coding environment, and report to my engineering lead. I get the control, but I carry the ultimate liability for whether it works or not.
That is the perfect distinction. You trade the administrative simplicity of outsourcing for the operational necessity of retaining control.
Mm.
And that control.
Yeah.
That's the key to handling the structural friction we talked about at the start.
Right.
So let's move to that strategic side. Why is fixed headcount permanent hiring becoming such a liability for modern companies?
The friction is palpable. We're talking about hiring timelines that are just so long, 3 to 6 months sometimes for a specialized role, that can actively derail a critical project.
It stops you in your tracks.
Then you have the permanent fixed overhead, the benefits packages, the compliance, payroll taxes, all the long-term obligations. That model just lacks the agility you need for project-based or cyclical work.
And the key structural inefficiency there is that lag time. The time between identifying the need and actually getting someone productive in that seat, SA just bypasses that lag.
And focusing on the risk reduction part of it, SA lets you narrow your financial exposure to a really defined scope and time frame. You're not committing to a permanent salary before you know that demand is stable.
It's a multi-layered risk reduction.
How so?
Well, first, you lower your exposure to overhiring. If demand suddenly softens, you avoid costly severance and, you know, the morale damage that comes with layoffs.
Yeah, second.
Second, you mitigate the underutilization of expensive specialized talent. If you need a hyper-specialized engineer for just a six-week project, hiring them permanently makes zero financial sense. SA gives you that immediate, precise access without the long recruitment cycle and then a clean scale down when it's done.
Okay, but wait. Let's talk about the cost. Because if the hourly contract rate for an augmented professional is often significantly higher than the internal hourly wage for a full-timer, where's the efficiency?
That's the critical insight, it really is.
How is that reducing my cost or my risk if I'm paying a premium per hour?
Because organizations fall into this trap of comparing the SA contract rate against just the base salary. It's a false comparison. It completely ignores the fully loaded cost of employment.
The fixed cost burden.
The whole fixed cost burden of a permanent hire. Permanent hiring is a fixed cost model. You, the employer, you absorb all of it. Health insurance, vacation time, payroll taxes, recruitment fees, training, and critically, the high risk of idle labor during a slowdown.
So if my demand drops 20%, I'm still paying 100% of that fixed salary and benefits.
Exactly. Whereas SA operates on a completely variable, usage-based cost structure.
Labor spending perfectly aligns with active demand.
Perfectly. You only incur the cost when work is actively being done, usually through hourly invoicing. The provider manages the employment logistics, and they absorb the idle labor risk. The economic advantage isn't about the base labor rate. It's often more expensive per hour. The value is in the flexibility, the speed, and the risk containment. You're paying a premium for agility.
That framing makes the case. Okay, so let's talk application. For the listener thinking about how to implement this, which roles in industries really benefit the most?
You want to look for roles that are defined by clearly measurable output and an execution focus. This model is generally not suitable for roles needing deep institutional knowledge or foundational leadership.
Okay, so give me some examples.
In a professional setting, you see it a lot in IT, engineering, analytics, project management, anywhere you need to accelerate delivery on a defined project.
And in more operational environments.
Think manufacturing, large-scale logistics, complex warehousing. SA is great for handling things like production spikes, specialized maintenance, quality control audits, anything tied to peak seasons or specific projects. The common thread is that need for immediate capacity and measurable execution-driven output.
The scalability advantages are pretty clear then. You're aligning your capacity with real-time demand, not some forecast you made 6 months ago.
And critically, you scale without the organizational shock. SA lets you expand rapidly for market opportunity and then contract cleanly afterwards. This is so vital for organizational health. It preserves the morale of your core team because you're avoiding those demoralizing cycles of hiring and firing.
And because it happens within the existing framework, same managers, same standards, you keep that operational continuity even as you grow.
That's the key to scaling without disruption.
Okay, we have to address the caveat the source material brought up. When is staff augmentation not the right solution? Because it's not a silver bullet.
No, and applying it universally is a huge strategic mistake. The guide is very clear here. SA requires internal management strength.
So if my house isn't in order, it won't work.
Exactly. If you lack strong internal leadership, clear processes, defined direction, augmented staff will just struggle. They'll be underutilized. You end up paying a premium for workers you can't properly direct. In that case, you might be better off outsourcing the entire function.
And it's also not for strategic, highly confidential, or foundational roles.
No. The institutional knowledge risk is just too high. You wouldn't augment your chief technology officer or your head of R&D. SA excels at execution, not replacing your core knowledge bearers.
Which leads us right into the keys for success: integration and provider management. Now, if I'm retaining operational control and I'm responsible for daily management, doesn't this model actually create more overhead for my internal staff?
That's the most challenging trade-off, and it's what separates good SA from bad SA.
It sounds like a pretty major trade-off.
It is. The efficiency you gain is by shedding the administrative burden, payroll, benefits, tax compliance, recruiting. Those are substantial fixed costs.
Yeah.
But you absolutely retain the operational supervision burden.
So how do you mitigate that?
The effectiveness of the whole thing hinges on the rigor of your onboarding and integration. Effective augmentation requires structured onboarding that mirrors your internal standards, safety protocols, communication, systems access. If the integration is poor, your manager wastes time training them on basic workflow instead of leveraging their skill.
Which completely nullifies the value.
It does.
So if the efficiency gain isn't in reducing daily management, it has to be in the immediate readiness of the candidate you're bringing in.
Exactly. The source material points to providers like Regional Supplemental Services, RSS Inc., as an example of this operational first philosophy.
What does that mean in practice?
I mean, they see their role as extending your operating model, not just, you know, sending bodies.
Yeah.
An operational first provider doesn't just check for general skills. They pre-vet candidates for process fit.
So if my factory uses a specific piece of software,
they ensure their candidates are already certified or at least highly familiar with that specific tool set before they even walk in the door. They minimize your supervision burden by maximizing the candidate's readiness. That's how you get someone who can contribute from day one.
That focus on operational alignment seems vital, especially in those execution-focused environments, logistics, industrial settings, where any variance introduces risk to safety, to quality.
Absolutely. A quality provider embeds consistent safety awareness and execution discipline from the start. They ensure that the level of operational variance across different shifts or projects is minimized, whether the staff is internal or augmented. That consistency is just a prerequisite for maintaining control.
And finally, a quick but necessary detail on compliance. SA shifts all the employment-related risks, payroll, benefits, tax to the provider. Huge benefit.
Huge, especially in complex regulatory environments.
But operational compliance, following your internal policies, site safety standards, IP agreements, that remains a shared responsibility. You, the client, have to actively manage performance and compliance on the floor.
Right. So to kind of summarize the core understanding we've built today, staff augmentation is a powerful tool. It's for achieving flexibility and speed while critically maintaining management control.
Which is the key differentiator from outsourcing.
It's the key. It lets an organization respond to dynamic demand without sacrificing governance or taking on the fixed cost liabilities of permanent employment.
And as you move forward and integrate this into your long-term strategy, it's so important to remember that SA should be a complement. It should never be a replacement for your core internal team. It's the shock absorber that handles market variability.
Right. It lets your permanent staff focus on institutional knowledge and strategic development.
So for you, the strategic learner, the final implication here is how you can use the data that this flexible workforce generates. The source material notes that SA engagements produce a wealth of short-term performance metrics, demand spikes, specific skill utilization rates, time to productivity.
A lot of valuable data.
A ton. So here's a provocative final thought for you to consider. If staff augmentation consistently reveals specific, repeating skill gaps or demand patterns that your core staff cannot meet, how can you strategically use that high-definition, short-term performance data to proactively refine your permanent workforce strategy over the next 3 years? How do you ensure that flexible workforce complements, rather than compromises, your vital institutional knowledge? Think about moving from just reactive augmentation to truly strategic, data-informed structural change.